okay. You'll see.
Love
It'll be
Talk
easy.
Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. It once again, I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2490. That's 2490. Tonight we're going to have a very interesting guest, but before I get to her, first of all, our call-in number is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. Her name is Brigitte. I don't know. I say Brigitte. She says Brigitte. It's close. We'll say Brigitte. That makes it easier. Anyway, she is from Los Angeles, California, and for 15 years she has helped people successfully navigate murky waters of heartache, health recovery, and grief to reimagine and reinvent lives filled to the brim with joy and happiness and well-being. So many of us who have been abused, we don't have that well-being feeling, and we don't know how to find joy because, unfortunately, too many people keep concentrating and thinking about what happened to them in the past. But before I get to that and before I get to our guest, I'm going to read the mission statement and to let people know a little bit about NASCA. This is just a little bit about NASCA, and so I do this every Friday night, because I know that there's people who are listening tonight who've never listened to the show before. They listen to their computers or other ways. All right, so we have a single purpose at NASCA to address issues related to child abuse and trauma, and that's including sexual assault, violent and physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so two different ways, okay? One is educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic. We know that it's worldwide, okay? That's what it is. And number two is offering hope and healing through numerous paths, and that's providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. I'm really heavy on the prevention part. I think if we had more information throughout our cities, especially our cities, but suburbs, it doesn't matter where you live, and people worked a little harder and were, you know, a little bit more involved, I think that we could help children more. And I think that even with the crime rate, that would go down too. I very much believe in working with neighborhoods. But anyway, tonight we're going to work with a lady. We're going to speak to a lady, and she's our guest, who is going to tell us how, a little bit about herself, okay, what she may know about emotional abuse and so forth. And then we're going to get into how she works with people. Okay, so her name is Brigitte. That's what I'm going to say, Brigitte. I had a friend named Brigitte, and she spelled it the same way. And she is from Los Angeles, California, who for more than 15 years has helped people successfully navigate the murky waters of heartache. And it goes on and on and on. I don't want to read her whole bio here. But why don't you start out by telling us a little something about you, because people need to be able to draw a picture or get an idea of who they're dealing with, you know, who they're listening to, and so forth. Go ahead.
Thank you so much, Carol. Thank you. Yes, I am Birgit Tan, as you mentioned, and a little bit about me and in terms of my work in grief. As a grief transformation specialist, I help people transform their traumas and tragedies at regardless of how long has it been. For some people, it's a recent event, but many people, it is a long-term event. And actually what I find, particularly because with one of the tools that I have, Dance Away Sadness, Move Beyond Your Grief, a lot of time we work on our recent grief and then we find out that there is something that we buried from long time ago that is still there and try to come back and to heal. And this could include actually abuse that happened in our childhood. So that's one thing that's in terms of my work. And the abuse that happened in the childhood, many of us are aware, and it's definitely something that's very traumatizing about physical abuse and sexual abuse. And along with that, and sometimes without any physical and sexual abuse, and this is something, one of the reasons that drew me into this, not just my own personal experience with emotional abuse, but a lot of people that have difficulty, have some challenge as an adult in navigating our society, having challenge with relationships and on, when we actually really tap in and look back, or people who are experiencing grief and something happened and it impacted them so greatly, and when we look back, it's actually we realize and we find out that there are emotional abuse and neglect, but also emotional abuse that happened when we were a child. And unfortunately, unlike the physical abuse and sexual abuse that is a little more apparent, emotional abuse can be very sneaky sometimes. Emotional abuse can be so sneaky that the child who are being abused, I didn't realize I went through emotional abuse as far as my memories can remember, and I didn't even realize that until I learned about grief, and then I spoke to a physician who is a comprehensive doctor. He doesn't just treat your body but the whole person, and I said, oh wow, really? And it was one of those things that a lot of times very can be very subtle, and it is. But as we know, abuse is not just a physical and the emotional abuse. With myself, the first memory, the a lot of time we have childhood memories, and the childhood memory that I have, the first very first memory that I have about being a child, was actually going out somewhere, I think it was a temple or something, with my mother. And the memory I have and haunt me for a good while, and then with the way our mind worked, it actually buried it, and I kind of forget about it until as I go through my own journey of recovery, it came back, and when it came back, it was so strong, I started throwing up. But that memory was I went in there and I went with her, and the I think she was having a tough time, bless her heart. And she sat there and cried and cried and cried. And then at the end she says, you know, don't you, she basically told me as a child, this is what I grabbed. She basically told me that I was a burden. I make her life miserable. I should never misbehave because then she would leave. And better yet, if I misbehave and make her life even more miserable, she might kill herself, and then I will be guilty of killing. And then I will have a stepmother who will torture me. And
my God.
And that's my memory. The first thing I remember about being a child. And from that on, it was a memory of being told that I, over and over again, that I am an ugly, that I was an ugly duckling. That I was a loud kid, I will never fit in, I was an ugly duckling, over and over again. I remember one time that I came back from school because I and I wasn't too happy, and at dinner I went to her with my mom and I said, you know, I wanted to do this dance and I have a hard time with the dance, and she looked at me and said, well, you should never have tried to dance. You are a stiff, clumsy, ugly duckling with big, ugly legs who should never dance.
Oh, my.
This was an 8 or 9 years old kid. And and I actually stopped dancing back then. I stopped dancing for 32 years. And I also stopped wearing skirts or shorts because I got to hide my big, ugly legs, you know. And and so on and so forth. To the point, it was an interesting thing. I actually started having this thing in my mind of werewolves. You know, werewolves, they are like beautiful, wonderful people during the day, and then they turn into a monster at some point in time. And I'm like, oh, these are just werewolves. And I retreat, and that's the thing with the emotional abuse kids. A lot of time, the emotional abuse child, we don't carry a scar, and I feel like I was living a double life. On the outside, everything looks so perfect. I'm the only child, great students of a very well-to-do family. And every time, it's just like every lash, it makes me want to cry and make me want to run. And there's nowhere to turn because the person that I trusted the most is and the whole family, actually. Being a girl in a very patriarchal, you asked me earlier, Carol, where I'm from. I came from Indonesia, a particularly Chinese Indonesian background. It's a very patriarch family. And so being the only girl of a very patriarch, affluent family is like, oh, you are absolutely no good because you're not a boy. And we develop our unlovable and our feeling unlovable, our shames, and so on and so forth, which many people actually, as I work through my grief, as a grief transformation, learn that a lot of people that have this not enough feeling and no good and so forth, it stems from our childhood.
Yes. That's very, 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 very true. You know, when you're told as a child, you know, by your parent who's supposed to nurture you and love you and guide you and encourage you, all these things that you've mentioned, this is definite emotional abuse, you bet. You suffer from low self-esteem. You have difficulty establishing or maintaining relationships. You have challenges with intimacy and trust. There can be an issue with that. An unhealthy view of parenthood. And why wouldn't you have one? That may perpetuate the cycle of abuse, inability to cope with stress and frustrations. And I think that's where your dance comes in, that can help with that. And acceptance that violence is a normal part of a relationship. See, now that's emotional abuse as I've been trained and taught. And what you're speaking about is very, very much alike, you know, because you were downed so by your mother. She called you an ugly duckling. She said your legs were not right. And all these things. And you're never going to amount to anything. And, you know, that brings a child down. That breaks their spirit. That breaks their spirit. Because I don't know if you ever heard of the saying before, but if she's so bad or so funny looking or whatever, that even her own mother didn't love her. That's what we say over here.
Yeah.
So, you know, it is a terrible thing. I see that Bill is here. He's the founder of NASCA. I'm going to put his mic on here. It's twirling around.
Yeah,
there you go, Bill.
I asked you not to call on me yet because I'm trying to get some special guests for you, and I mean some panelists for you and special guests for next week. Can you hold off just a minute?
Oh, sure,
anyway,
no
welcome,
problem.
Welcome.
I'll put you back on hold, and I can, don't worry, I can handle the conversation. It'll be fine. But please, you know, if you could get someone, that's nice, too. But anyway, yeah. And then also, too, I've noticed that over in the other countries, and this can happen
mm-hmm.
right here, too, all right,
yeah.
girls are
yeah.
not looked at to be as anything,
mm-hmm.
you know. They're looked down on. They're not as smart. You know, they can't do as much. And that's a lot here, also in our country, too, you know. I mean, I grew up in a family like that also, where, you know, the males
mm-hmm.
meant everything and the females meant nothing. So that's a very sad thing. Yes, it is. So I'm sorry you went through that, you know. So how did you do in school? Regular school.
I actually did very well in school. I think I was fortunate in that because I was the only child, they basically trained me to be a boy.
Uh-huh.
Which
mm-hmm.
in a way is another story. I do very well in school, and that's what I was saying with the double life. You know, it's like I did very well in school. I was a student, teacher's assistant, and so forth. And yeah, there are a few teachers who attempted to do interesting things like molesting me and things like that. But I actually for those type of thing, I did well in school, and for certain things such as the teachers, you know, trying to molest me and certain things, my mother would be very protective, would be really great, which is really helpful actually. Thank goodness that that part I was taken care. Except then, you know, but like you said, it was, and this is actually what I see a lot of time with the grief clients that I work with. I work with a lot of divorce because of my own background. I work with a lot of cancer. My initial training is actually in oncology. I'm a board certified veterinarian oncologist. I work with a lot of cancer clients. But also because of my own divorce, with a lot of divorce, and the one of the number one consequence is abuse, whether it is sexual, physical, or even emotional abuse, is intimacy. That is something that almost everybody have challenged as we navigate and as we work through our healing, including myself. That is something that I become so protective because I was so afraid of getting hurt emotionally. Mm-hmm. I just become so protective. I just said, well, if I just, you know, I turn into a stone, so to say,
mm-hmm.
nobody can hurt me. And definitely makes sense to a child. And I said, well, you know, if I turn into an ice queen, it's even better. I will never feel anything. And if you look in the Disney movie, the ice queen still look pretty anyway on the outside.
Mm-hmm,
and believe it or not, I did it so well that when my former husband left, he said, you know, you're such a great person, actually. I know that. But I can't stay any longer because you have no love. You're afraid of love, and you're an ice queen.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was my wake-up call
yeah.
that started my journey into this recovery, actually.
Well, you know, if your mother's telling you, you know, for years, and I don't know if your husband did this to you also, but if they're telling you that you have you know, that your body is inferior, say. You say you have fat legs or you have skinny legs or you know, you're an ugly duckling, you had mentioned once before. And all these other things, a child's mind is like a sponge, you know, absolutely like a sponge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they're
yep.
going to absorb that and they're going to believe that because this is the mother. And the mother figure is so important to a child, you know, to their development. And if the mother is going to give you all negatives and nothing praise you for anything, then you know, you're going to grow up with all kinds of problems about your body, your mind, yourself, and everything. So I can understand that. Well, we have a 617 area code number here. Let me get them on. Okay.
Mhm. Yeah.
Nancy, 617. Who am I speaking to?
Yes. Yes. Hi, Nancy Brown.
Oh, hi. How are you? Yeah, we have on a. I'm glad you called in. We have someone here that is. I don't know if you've been listening or not. A lot of people listen to their computers, but she's very much into teaching people how to dance away sadness. Okay, and those of us who have been sexually abused, physically, mentally, emotionally, especially on the emotional angle of it, how it affects our life in a very, very negative way. And now that you're here, you can listen, and then I'll come back to you and ask you questions, or you can make a comment. Okay. Now, in her case, her mother was her worst enemy. Let's put it that way. Okay. Where she didn't give her any praise, you know, or anything, and made her feel very, very bad about herself. And that, of course, as you and I know, all we survivors, that goes into many times our adulthood, you know, and it makes just life miserable. Okay, let's get back to our guest here. Her name is Bridget, that's how I say it, and because I can't say it any other way. She's laughing at me. Okay, so, but anyway, let's get back to what she was talking about, because I know that you see in the bio here, it says, I founded the Dance Away Sadness, Dance Away Sadness. What if people don't know how to dance?
Right, absolutely.
Yeah. What does that mean to you when a person is like stone, they can't dance? I'm not a good dancer.
Well,
I don't even want to see people make me dance, for God's sake. Go ahead.
Right. So with Dance Away Sadness, it's actually a freestyle dancing. And so, you know, one thing that I always say is I did not dance until I was 40. I did not grow up a dancer. I mentioned briefly that one of the things that I remember vividly in my mind being the emotional abuse is I was told I was a stiff, clumsy, ugly duckling with big, ugly legs who should never dance. And from that moment on, the next 32 years, I will not dance. Because why would I? It's traumatizing. And when I went through life seemingly at the time out of the blue divorce, something in me just told me to just move to music. And so Dance Away Sadness actually started in my bedroom with nobody watching, because God forbid anybody see me even move.
Right.
I just start moving, and that was a lot of anger and tears and in my bedroom at night. And from there, even though I had never danced before that, I discovered that each time I do that, it just helps me touch a part of grief that words cannot touch. And I had so many buried grief by then, as well as a recent grief, that some of them I could not even put it in words. And since I was so good in turning myself because of the emotional abuse to turning myself into a stone or an ice queen, I couldn't feel a thing, even though there was so much grief in me. And so I couldn't even put it into words. And the dance, actually, each time it just helped touch that part of grief that's been frozen and melted and helped me move through that. And so with Dance Away Sadness, you don't need to be able to dance. I still cannot dance. What it is I really cannot follow rhythm or I cannot follow dance move very well. If you want me to dance waltz, I still can't do it. So Dance Away Sadness is basically to allow the music and your heart leads you such that you can touch what it is that's for you to touch at the moment and move through it and release it as appropriate. And so I do a lot of Dance Away Sadness actually in cancer centers. And for people who are going through cancer treatment, some of them are so weak or tired that they lie down the whole time. And with the music, with the coaching through the Dance Away Sadness, as well as everything else going on, some people are, you know, simply just sit there and tap their feet, or so I have people lie down and all they do is tapping their fingers and moving their feet from time to time, and it seems to help, because it's we know that dancing, we know that music and dancing has a different vibrations in it. You know, everything right. in this universe vibrates. Our cells, the chairs, everything vibrates at different frequency. And you might have heard or not the name Dr. Joe Dispenza, who is a very known scholar. And he find out that when we read something or we listen to something, it gets into our mind. But when we have an impactful experience, such as when we are being abused or we're going through grief, or it might be a good experience like getting married, but any impactful experience, it actually gets beyond our mind. It got to us into our cellular level, and it sits there. And so if we want to, if it is an experience that we don't want, that got stuck in our cells, so to say, such as this repeated abuse, whether it's physical, sexual, or even emotional, or even the trauma of being neglected. It can be traumatizing to a kid. Then, you know, when we really want to, one of a really good way to get rid of it is to move it out of our cells, is to list, to allow something with different vibration. If you ever listen to music and watch movements, you know that music has different vibrations than words, or if we write things. And the vibration of music, it kind of allow the cells, our cells, to vibrate differently. And even when you just tapping your hands or your feet or something, it allows kind of the cells in your body to move a little differently and vibrates a little differently. And along with the coaching and so forth, I think that's what helps people with Dance Away Sadness. Even if you're not a dancer and even if you don't like dancing, and it seems to still help. And I honestly I developed Dance Away Sadness, honestly, for people who's experiencing recent grief. And to my surprise, it's actually worked just as well, if not even better, for grief that has been in us for a long time, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years.
I think it's like, from what you're saying, it's sort of like a release, okay? See, I love to sing, all right? I love to sing. And I sing pretty well, and I've been in bands and everything else. But when it came to actual movement, all right, movement, I felt stiff, and I don't know why. But I sort of like try to bebop around a little bit, you know, and to sway and things like that. But I think that the dancing or singing, both of them, and you said like you say movement, okay, it lifts the spirit. It lifts the spirit. And at least for during that time, you know, now you work with all different kinds of people. You work with people who have been emotionally abused, sexually abused, physically abused, also people who have cancer and other terrible, debilitating diseases. And still, if you can get them even to like you said, to tap their toes or to move, to move, it makes them actually feel a little bit better. And I can believe that. I can believe that. Let me go to Nancy, who called in first, and then I'll come down to the 510 area code. I'm not too sure who that is. Nancy, you're open. Go ahead.
Hi, good evening.
You have any questions? Go ahead.
Yes. Hi, good evening. This is Nancy V. Brown. I just want to say that I'm just in awe listening to you, and everything you're saying is like, you know, when God says you are at the right place at the right time, okay? Because literally we were just talking about vibrations today, but you just went into like a deeper level of this vibration, the different ways that you can create vibrations. Mm. You just gave, like, for kids with ADHD and all of that, artists, I'm going to just say that you did it for everybody in the room perfectly. I have had a family members who have had and friends who've had cancer, and I've seen the journey for some of them. And I understand that you're right. Vibrations are so important because that person is literally going off vibrations. That's what's keeping them alive and in touch. And just like you said, tapping your feet. So we all have to be aware of how we vibrate, what type of energy we put out, because it affects the people around us. And when we're in a healing environment, for those who are sick and need healing, we have to be really sensitive about what kind of vibrations we put out. We have to just be really careful. And I love what you're saying, and it made me happy. It made me want to go dance when we get off this phone.
There you go. Yeah. I like that. I'll sit back and watch.
I'll be dancing. We'll dance together.
We'll dance together. Well, then,
okay, just shove me around. I'll move a little bit. Okay, let's go down to the 510 area code. I'm not too sure who this is. I think it's Alma. Let's see, from California. Let me open up her mic.
Hello, this is Alma.
Oh, it is. Okay, hi. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
That's good. Listen, I don't know how much you've heard of this, but now, see, there's all different ways. With me, this is the way I look at it. Like, we have so much grief so many times. In fact, it even mentions in the bio, like, the grief of the loss of a child or a grief of a loved one, a partner, whomever. And so often we become like stone. We don't want to feel. We numb ourselves out. Well, I know how I numbed myself out, okay? That was through alcohol and drugs. But that's not the way to do it. But people have to, feel better and to learn how to live again. They do. They have to learn to live how to live again. And Richard had just pointed out that so often people, they are so numbed out because they're so filled with grief. And, they don't like themselves. They don't have any good, they have low self-esteem. If they've been coming from a family, say there was so much emotional abuse, a lot of people don't talk enough about emotional abuse. But that's when, like at home, when our parents, just make us feel horrible about ourselves. We're stupid, we're fat, we're ugly, we're all these other things they can say, whatever they say. And then that affects us into our adult life, and we have a hard time dealing, with any of the things that we go through in life because we've been so emotionally abused, and that's a terrible thing to go through. So that's basically what we're speaking about. Go ahead.
I would say, I can definitely relate to that because I lost my brother when we were both very little. He was 4 years old and I was 3 years old. Mm-hmm. And, people think that when you're that small, you don't remember things. But for me, because it happened at such a young age, I think that it was very powerful. And then my mom wasn't able to have kids after my brother passed. So I am an only child now. But that grief of losing my brother has stayed with me always. And it does manifest in different ways, the fear of being open to people because, I'm afraid to get hurt, or there's different, things that manifest from that pain and that grief that you're talking about.
Right. And that's what Bridget had just said a few minutes ago, afraid of getting hurt. You want to respond to that, Bridget?
Yeah, absolutely. It is a lot of time for us, once we get hurt, because who wants to get hurt, right? Nobody does. So it's very, actually, a very normal and natural reactions for anybody. Once we get hurt, we don't want to to get hurt again, and we become overprotective of ourselves. And as you just say, Talma, you know, you don't want to get too close to people. I mentioned earlier, I got so good in protecting myself and numbing myself out of everything. I basically turned into an ice queen so successfully until I wake up one day. And at the same time, one of my friends put it very, very, very well. This is after my divorce, and then not long after that, my only trusted companion, which is not even a person. I could not trust a person. I could not open up to a person. It was a cat. He was a 20-year-old cat, and he suddenly died. He was healthy, and then 5 days later, he was healthy. He got sick. 5 days later, he died. And I was in so much pain, and I said, why even? I thought I was safe not loving a person, but I just love a cat, and then and the cat died. And now I'm in so much pain. And thankfully, one of my wife's friend said, well, you know what? Yes, we might get hurt from loving and opening to somebody, but if we never opened up, we would have never experienced the beauty and the connections that in that case, the 19 years, I have the cat since he was 1 year old, the 19 years of beauty and connections and companionship that we have. And that is very true. Yes, we could get hurt again. And at the same time, if we don't give ourselves the opportunity, then we would have never experienced the beauty and the love and the connection. And we know that even if we get hurt, even if we get hurt again, we survive it once, we're going to survive it again. And it is not what happened to us that make us. It is what we make out of what happened to us. So, yes, we might get hurt again, but you know, we can definitely choose to say, okay, even if this is, it was with that one, it was a beautiful, loving relationship, unconditional relationship. That looking back, if I had closed myself down to that cat, which I did actually with a different pet, then I wouldn't have the connections, and so. It is very normal and natural to not want to get hurt. But when we do that, it actually make us live a very lonely life, a life that we might allow people to certain, you know, within an arm length away, but then not even a true connection that is much more beautiful.
I think with that said, I would like to add that, you know, there's definitely both sides to that. You know, you can't be too trusting as well, because you'll keep getting hurt, or you'll put yourself in situations to be hurt. So you still have to be careful and very picky about the energy that you allow in your life, because there are people with bad motives, like my own family.
Oh, yeah.
You know, has hurt me, and they pretend in my face that they're loving and they want to be, you know, caring, but behind my back, they, you know, talk bad things about me. They, like, actually, you know, try to do things to make me look, you know, worse. They, you know, it's, I can't even say the things they've done because it's embarrassing, but they've done things to hurt me. So, like you say, you have to give people an opportunity, but sometimes those people don't deserve that opportunity. So at the same time, you have to be very careful with who you allow to have that opportunity.
Well, I would say you want to give yourself, not people, an opportunity. You want to give we want to give ourselves an opportunity, not necessarily to give people an opportunity. And I completely agree with what you say. There are people who just, you know, dare to harm us, or people just never change. The person emotionally abused me as a child, the person's still around and still saying the same things to a degree. So I definitely learned to say, okay, because you are a family member, you're my mother, and I'm the only child, I sure have to, I want to take care of you, but I limit myself. I learned to not
you set your
anything
boundaries.
That yeah. I set my boundary. I don't hang out with her for days and weeks. And things like that. And that there are times, though, there are times when of a time with like, okay, you know, this person is kind and seems to be trustworthy and everything. And then we give ourselves an opportunity to open up a little bit, knowing that is it possible we might be wrong after all these this evaluation here as it is, and is it possible life happens and the person get taken away from us in one way or another? Yes, it is. But then, you know, we give ourselves that opportunity, and instead of just giving people an opportunity, we give ourselves the opportunity to say, okay, I'll take a chance, but this seems like a good chance to take.
Right. You have to make sure you... Mm-hmm. You know, you measure whether it's...
What I think what you're saying there, Alma, I agree with you. And I also agree with Bridget. You see, what we tend to do, you know, what we tend to do is because we have been so abused, you know, horribly abused, most of us. First of all, what we do is we call it divorce those people who are toxic to us. Okay, in our family. I've done it. And it's not easy. And and with my mother, who was very, very abusive to me emotionally, and oh my God, and I wouldn't go into detail even on the radio to even talk about it because it was too horrific, beatings, everything. When it came time for her, you mentioned something here, Bridget, about, you know, to take care of. Like, I don't know if I want to take care of her. I don't want to take care of my mother. Why should I? She shouldn't take care of me. But I made sure that, and it was all mechanical. See, this is a part of my problem, Bridget. You know, it's like mechanical. I did everything for her in her last year of life, say. Made sure that she had everything that she needed, went down every weekend with my daughter. I live 75 miles each way, and I had care in there for her. And then she ended up in the hospital, and she did pass away there. But, the point is I made sure she had everything that she needed, everything. But it was mechanically done. Same thing with my stepfather. There was no relationship there either. So it was mechanical, 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 mechanical. And I sort of like numbed myself out to the feelings, which you spoke about earlier, Bridget, you know, is a numbing out of the feelings. So, but I didn't care that I divorced them because the way that I look at it is that they knew what they were doing in their harm's way, okay, and they didn't care. But it didn't stop me from giving other people a chance. So, you know, I look at it as giving people a chance, not that they have to prove themselves to me exactly, but our red flags go up, okay? You know, when you've been emotionally, sexually, physically, mentally, neglected, we have like little antennas, you know, we have our little antennas go up. And I'm always the type of person to look for those red flags. And if I see something and if I can't straighten it out with the person, can't discuss it with the person, whatever, then they're out of my life. Okay, that's just the way it is. Because I don't want to be hurt anymore. Okay? I think that, so Alma, she understands too. So you see, I think we put up a wall, we take the wall down, we let ourselves open, we're very vulnerable, and, we let people into our lives. And either it's going to work or it's not going to work. And at this point in my life, I don't give a damn. You know what I'm saying? I don't care that much.
Yeah.
But I'm not being yelled at anymore. No, I can come and go as I want. Anything I want to do, I can do. But there are those times. Now, ladies, there are those times when it would be nice to cuddle up to some guy, you know, and maybe go out to dinner, things like that. But, yeah, we have our antennas up, and we are very careful. At least we should be, you know, because we've been through so much. But I do want to get back to what you do with your dancing. But before I do that, I want Bill to have something to say. He's here. And see if he wants to make a comment.
Yeah, first of all, I want to thank Nancy and Alma both for responding to my request that we needed panelists tonight. So thank you very much, ladies.
Yeah.
We noticed that, the beginning of the show is about energy, basically. And frankly, when we're traumatized, we have really bad energy. And a lot of us are kind of locked inside ourselves. I know for me, the last decision I ever made entirely by myself was to go take a shower after I used the swimming pool to get the chlorine off of me. And that's where I was attacked, basically, by someone who reached over my back and down into my swim shorts. I was 11 years old. You know, from that point on, my life was not my own. I was trapped in the pattern of behavior that this guy led me through, and that later I developed, you know, my own patterns of behavior as a result of the kinds of abuse that I was to encounter, you know, from that point forward. That's the last time I made my own decision entirely on my own. Go take that shower. After that, it's all been second guessing. It's all been being afraid. It's all been hurt, you know, being hurt. It's all been feeling sometimes responsible or, you know, or certainly in grief. Grief, by the way, is something you could describe grief in many, many ways, but it affects every aspect of our life. And one of the things that happens is we, you know, for me, I froze. It's one of the three ways you respond to being attacked, but that continues. Because freezing, fighting, or fleeing, they're all like negative responses to the trauma that continue on into our adulthood. So we might continue to freeze when we're presented with situations as 20 and 30-year-olds. And we might run away from them as 20 and 30-year-olds, or we might fight them, or any combination. Dance, then, you know, movement at all, but dance specifically, because it is rhythmic to some degree, allows us to break the cycle of whatever it is we're feeling at the moment, and that in itself is a good thing, to vibrate in a different way, if you will, because if we vibrate in a different way, then we are a little more free to do what ultimately is the thing we have to do, which is to change our behavior, not the other person's, our own behavior. So, you know, it really doesn't matter what other people do eventually. It matters what we do, perhaps in response to what they do, but it's our actions that we own them. We have to own them. Eventually, we have to own these things and the feelings that come along with them. So if we're constantly being bummed out by choosing the wrong relationship, I think what we need to do is we need to look at the set of things that we look for in the partner and perhaps change, you know, the what it is we're looking for in some way, you know, because we keep choosing the same person. And that's because we have the same set of kind of requirements for that person to fulfill. Sometimes they're very small. You know, but they are a pattern. And until we break the pattern of what we're looking for, we're not going to find the new person that fits the new pattern. That's what something like dance or grief recovery or trauma therapy in general give us the opportunity to do, to change our own behavior. And in doing so, we change our own life. So we don't change anybody else or any other fact of our life, only us. And Brigitte, I'm so glad you came on the show. We've actually known each other for quite some time, although we didn't remember that we'd known each other, because she was part of a group that I attended years ago, and she remembered me. Sorry about that, Bridget. Poor thing. But when I found that
out,
you know, she came on the show, and we're delighted to have you, Bridget. Thank you so much, Carol, for giving me a chance to comment.
Oh, no, that's fine.
Thank you, thank you.
I want to say something to that also, too. Well, we're in that mode. I'm going to call it in that mode, you know, where we're stuck. You get stuck.
Mm-hmm.
You're feeling bad. You're feeling you have no self-esteem, or you're feeling different. I feel different many times than other people. It's something that I have to work on yet. We need to get out of that. And I think that, see, I used to run. Okay, I was very, very athletic. And that running gave me a sense of freedom. And I like fast things. I like motorcycles. I really do. And I've been riding since I was 16, okay? This is the way it is. And I love to sing. And that made me feel good. And I think that when we get ourselves down into that dump, that down into the, you know, the gutter, our depression, because many times we suffer from a certain amount of depression, from whatever it is that we're, you know, suffering from,
mm-hmm.
whether it be
mm-hmm.
child abuse in the sense of parental or sexual abuse also, you know, like incest in the family or outside of the family, or whether it be bullied in school, all the things that many of us go through, okay, all these things that weigh us down. I think it is good to get some joy into our life, whatever that joy might be. And we have to come in contact with what makes us happy. And I could see, I'm going to tell everyone, go out and dance, you know, because I can see that swaying motion that you're speaking about, you know, like if you're swaying and you're feeling and it's probably relaxing your body and your mind is thinking, and if you had some good music to go with it, you know, I could see that being beneficial in the sense where you're changing, you know, the way that you're thinking, and you're going to bring yourself up out of maybe at that time of whatever depressive state that you might be in. So I like that idea. Okay, go ahead. Let's see what else we have here in the bio. As a certified grief recovery specialist, I am fully qualified and capable to help those who are still traversing the dark valley of their lives move through and beyond their grief. If a person loses someone who's very close to them, you were speaking about your cat before. I have a cat, and then my cat's getting old, and I'm scared, okay,
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
I love my cat.
Yeah.
And all she wants is for me to, you know, feed her, pet her, love her, hold her, you know, all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
People are so demanding, okay? Whereas with a cat, you know, that there's no, there's nothing there you have to worry about. So I understand where you were coming from when you were speaking about your cat. But when a person loses, say, a family member that they adore, say
mm-hmm.
a child, for God's sake, I have people who have lost a child. That's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
How do they get through that type of grief? Now, see, that's a grief beyond grief, I think. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say one thing that's a common ground, which regardless of what is going on, and of course losing a loved one, particularly a child, as well as any, you know, any close family member, is definitely a significant cause of grief. A couple things that I would say. A lot of time when something happens, either and sometimes what happens is if we experience abuse as a child, given the main line here being a child abuse, even whether it is somebody that you lose at this very moment, somebody that a loved one or something, perhaps even a job or something, or actually a memory of something that can come up to us that bring us grief, there are a couple things that I find where as a fundamental for everybody that it's helpful. And the first thing is to remember, this is a quote from Viktor Frankl, that say an abnormal behavior in an abnormal situation is normal reaction or normal behavior. And so if we just losing a child or a job or a memory of something that perhaps you buried it for a while and then it come back to you now that, oh my goodness, this is something that happened to me before and it's now causing me a lot of rattles and grief, then one thing is a lot of time people expect themselves to behave perfectly normal, to say, oh, we're going to be okay and we're going to put a good smiley face and we're going to go to work like nothing ever happened. And that's just something that's not even normal if we do that. So to know that when something happens, that if we are finding ourselves not acting right or not thinking right or not eating right or something, it's actually completely normal, and not to be hard on our, and so we don't need to be hard on ourselves and not expecting ourselves to be normal when something's not quite normal. And then the other things that I find actually helpful when something happens, whatever the cause it is to be what I call to be a heart with ears and open hands. And what is a heart with ears and open hands? This is something I mentioned in my most recent book, Seeking Peace. To be a heart with ears and open hands is to listen with compassion and no judgment. And in this case, to listen to ourselves. Because a lot of time when something happens, we're not quite in our normal mind state, so to say. We might go and do something we don't usually do, or we might say something to somebody that we don't usually say. And then because people, our nature is to want to do the best we can, a lot of time we get back home and then at night we're like, oh, my God. Stupid me, why did I do that? Oh my God, am I losing it? Am I going crazy? Why did I say that? If something's just happening in your life, whatever that causing the grief, then don't do that to yourself. Just if you notice you're doing something, you're saying something, to just listen with compassion and no judgment of whatever it is that you're doing. Things are not normal, and your abnormal behavior is actually perfectly normal. And now if what you do is hurting somebody else, you want to perhaps go out and try to make amends. But, you know, not judging yourself. And then the other thing is the part of the open hands. And the open hands is to truly ask for support and help. And doing that with no attachments, which is a difference. It's not a gripping hand. It's an open hand. In that we ask for support, we ask for help, and whatever it is that somebody else can provide us, whether it is somebody that can listen to us for an hour or help us run an errand, whatever the extent that somebody can do for us, we're grateful for that. We accept that. And at the same time, we're not having, say, an expectation, you must do this for me, because then we actually, if it doesn't happen, then we get another source of grief and another source of hurt. And so those two things typically is the first step when something happen in our life and cause us grief.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, we should graciously, you know, if people want to help us, to accept it. And also, too, there's nothing wrong with going for help, okay? If we need help, if we're in a terribly depressive state, and what's going on with our country now is making everything tenfold. The emergency rooms are filled to the brim with people coming in with children who've been, you know, abused. And that can be any type of abuse, physical, mental, emotional, sexual, whatever, neglect. And there's just so many things going on in our country. So even at its best, we have a problem. And now with all the terror in the streets and all the other things, it just tenfolds all of the stress that we're so filled with. And it seems like that what we are as an individual, you know, whatever, thing that we're suffering from still, because we always work on ourselves every day, we hope, okay? We're never going to be 100%, Bridget, those of us who have gone through horrific child abuse and stuff. But I think that I've gotten probably as far as I'm going to get, and I'm okay with that because I'm very functioning and I can help a lot of people and all this other stuff. And with the things that I still have left that kind of bring me down, I have come to accept because, hey, I'm 73 and you know what? I'm still standing. That's what I always say. I'm still standing. So
yeah.
I see also, too, it's not enough just to survive. I mean, a lot of people are still trying to survive, you know, from what they've gone through in their lives. But then once they reach a certain plateau, once they reach a certain point in their lives, I think that the survivors, and I'm asking this and I'm saying this at the same time, should, you know, try to help other people. Because if they're at the point where they can be effective and help other people, like you're helping tonight. You gave us, you're teaching us, you know, to dance. That's one way of free movement, and that would get you out of your depressive state, like, say, at that point. That's what I would consider it as, and I think that's very good.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever it is, you know, that makes you happy, if we concentrate too much on what makes us unhappy, then we're never going to grow.
Mm-hmm.
So if we find ourselves feeling depressed or whatever the case might be, get happy. You know? So I do like that. I'm going to go to the panel and see. I'll go up to Bill. I'll go from Bill to Nancy and to Alma. And, Bill, do you have anything you would like to say or ask a question of?
Well, I'll just make the note that dance therapy, which is what this is sometimes known as, is a recognized and effective way to start to unlock who we are, as I said before, and just as much as different kinds of art therapies like painting or writing or journaling or you know, animal therapies, these are all paths to, they're tools. They're paths to get us to experience ourselves in a way that we're not normally experiencing ourselves because they all bring joy. So does exercise like you did, Carol, with the running. You know, that you get a result that's different than the result than you get if you're sitting around, you know. And they are doorways to recovery. They're not recovery. Recovery, I think, is in the action that follows the unlocking. And there's many paths to recovery, and we talk about them all the time, many, many journeys. But these are all viable, you know, tools to use, and I love it. I took dance. Brigitte doesn't know this about me. I took dance when I was in my early 20s. Now, that was too late to become a dancer. But I took it seriously.
Hmm.
And I went to, because I had a girlfriend who was up from Mexico. She was part of the Ballet Folklorico, and Mexico had actually sent her and a small group of other Mexican students from the Ballet Folklorico to New York City to study modern dance and then take it back to Mexico. And, and I lived with her for a couple of years, and during that time, I danced, and I was a total... I was horrible as a dancer because I was so locked up. But on the other hand, I got to experience, in this case, a group of professional people who did it. They took it very seriously, like as if you were a minister, you would take your religious experience very seriously. Well, for them as dancers, professional dancers. And I went to the Chimera School. I studied with Murray Lewis. I studied with Alvin Nicolai. I mean, these were big, big people. Of course, I was not in their, dance troupe, but I took class from them for a couple of years. What an experience! Completely different than I had ever been exposed to as a child, because my parents were not creative at all, and I was bubbling with creativity, just did not know how to express it. I really believe in any of the art therapies, including dance or music, or writing, or whatever it is, as being, or painting, as being, or poetry, or whatever it is, as being really great gateways to unlocking ourselves and giving ourselves the opportunity for the for the real meat of recovery, which is working on ourselves. You know, so thank you very much, Brigitte, for coming on again tonight. Really appreciate your, you know, what you had to say tonight.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure.
Yeah. And I agree with that. So you're telling us that at the end of 2 years or whatever it was, you're able to dance?
No.
Is that what happened?
I told you that.
No.
I was not able to dance. I understand dance. I took some ballet too. Later I went to the Strasbourg Institute, which was more for acting, but the Strasbourg people encourage not only dance, but also Tai Chi, other kinds of movement therapy, and acting, and singing, all of it wrapped into one thing. And I did all that, so, you know, I do have a background in some of this sort of semi-professionally, and I just want to verbalize that you can believe that these are viable paths that you should consider using, any of them. You know, that appeal to you, do try them out and stay with them for a little while. Now, I left Carol when I broke up with the girl. She broke up with me, and I was heartbroken. But she and her family introduced me, because I went to Mexico for 6 months, and I lived with her entire family, which was all about art. So they had a guy that wrote contemporary modern music, which is very strange. Her mother was the pianist for the Philharmonic. Her cousin was a noted guitar, like a folk guitar player, and her father was a very well known documentarian who we wouldn't let in the United States because he had ties to Cuba, apparently. But anyway, the point is, their whole family, there was no problem with art. Art was what it was all about. And for my family, art was okay for a hobby, but not for a career. And that's until I met her, I was locked in that kind of thinking. But I was I was seething with, you know, all kinds of art creativity that I wanted to expose, and I didn't know how.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's good, and it's bad, and it's sad all at the same time, you know, because, you know, I was hoping that you would say that through the dancing, that it made you feel better about yourself. See, it, like, a lot of times when people can't do something or they think they can't do something, it's because there's something that happened to them that made them feel that way, okay? And so, like, you were not able enough after 2 years to learn to dance freely and openly and feel good about yourself while you're doing it, to have that release, as I like to call it, you know, release. And whereas when I used to run, I would run until I dropped, okay? Because if I was being screamed at and all that other stuff, I'd just go out and run.
I was exposed to dance at a professional level, and I had never done dance before, so I was never going to be able to compete at that level. What it did allow me to do after I got over the misery of losing the girlfriend, which was horrible, I went back to school at NYU, and I took film, TV, and journalism. I gave myself permission, because that's what I really need. I need somebody to give me permission to do stuff. I gave it to myself, and I went back to school, and, you know, all those things are creative pursuits, and that's where I went to the Strasbourg Institute and other things, too. So it did have something to do with the path that led me to my career, for example. Absolutely.
Right. Well, a lot of us have done that and gotten to where we are today because of what we've allowed ourselves to do. Hey, he was on the Golden Girls. He was cameraman for the Golden Girls, too. Isn't that right?
Wow.
Yes, I used to love that show. I used to watch it all the time. I thought it was so funny. Yeah. I like that. But anyway, let's go down to Alma here and see what she has to say about all of this. Alma, are you still there? Her mic is open.
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay. Well, what do you think about all this self-expression? I think that's what we're talking about here. being able to self-express.
No, I love dance. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I always found that dance was very therapeutic. I did Latin jazz. I did ballet. And I always danced, like, at all the parties. Because, you know, it made me happy. And there were very little things, you know, when I was growing up that made me happy. So I feel that it was an escape. And it was, you know, something that I still love to do. Like, when I am feeling, like, depressed, I do listen to music, uplifting music, that makes me feel better. So it's a good resource to have.
I think so, too. Now, instead of dancing, I will sing. I'll turn on the station, you know. I'll say, Alexa, play this. Alexa, play that. I better not talk too loud or she'll hear me. But, you know, play this, play that. And play this group, play that group. And I just go nuts. And I don't care. I had one neighbor outside clap. After one song I was singing. That made me feel good, I have to admit. But, but it was like a release because I love to sing. And I was in bands. I used to sing in New York City along with other kids. A limo would pick us up, take us to New York City, and we played with the bands. Okay, we're like background singers. And a couple times I did have to sing by myself, so I went over and I took a couple more swigs of beer, let me tell you. Whoa, because I'm Miss Panic Child here. But anyway, we have to find some way of self-expressing, you know, and to get out of that terrible place where we are at times. And it does come back. We do get triggered. People who have been abused can get triggered. And so we have to learn how to handling our triggering, you know, without, say, like going back to alcohol or drinking drugging, whatever. Something that's positive. Like dancing, singing, running, ballet, or whatever Bill was doing, you know, all this stuff. Let's go down to Nancy from West Virginia. She dropped off for a second, but she's back again. Okay. Are you there, Nancy?
Yes, hi. I'm here.
That's
How are
good.
You? Okay. Okay.
So what do you think about all this dancing?
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah, I think dance is a wonderful form of therapy. I do a lot of it at home. I dance to regular music with the kids. I'll dance to Spanish music, gospel music. I'm dancing, and it really does change my mood, especially if I'm feeling down, if I'm feeling depressed, depending on if I have anxiety that day. I'll get a gospel song that's focusing on healing that area or encouraging me to hang strong and silence the other voices, right? But with all the international pressure that the world is under with COVID and the current environment, you know, in the country has been very toxic. When we talk about COVID in the country, politics, victims' rights, BLML. And so, you know, with everything going on in the world, we know that we're under pressure and people are like very sensitive. And so for us to be able to take some of these tools to help us heal and to calm those feelings down and take control, just like Bill said, take control of our emotions and our vibrations, like you guys were talking about later. This is some great information that will, I pray to God that it really helps save a life, even tonight as they're listening to this recording. Because this is so, so healing. And dancing is such a strong vibration. You feel it in your ears. You feel it in your hands. You feel it in your heart. You feel it in your feet. You feel it on your hair, on your body. It's such a strong vibration of the whole body movement that is a wonderful energy to put out in the world versus being angry and holding in all your frustration to yourself by yourself without having a release.
I agree with you. Just think, with all those kids out there that are there smashing things, burning things, if they started to dance, it would be a lot better, wouldn't it? Yes, it would. And you know, it's, you know, again, we all have to find something. Hold on. Something to make us feel better because we are under so much stress right now. And if ever before, you know, yeah, if ever before we needed something to make us feel good, we have to find whatever that is, whether it is being, you know, singing or running or dancing or painting or all the things that we've mentioned here. And it is a part of therapy, and it helps our minds, it helps our spirits, and it helps us feel so much better. And we become a happier person than happier people. And that's what's so wrong with this world. One of the many things is that we're so terribly, terribly unhappy. And as long as that happens, you know, if we don't help each other, you know, people out there, if you go out and for God's sake, start checking on the elderly, you know, please check on the elderly or the ones that are homebound if you can. We do know that in urban areas there's so many problems going on right now. A lot of people are hungry. They've lost their jobs. There's all these things that are happening. A lot of the store owners, they have insurance. Of course they have insurance, but, you know, it's going to take an awful long time to build up again, especially when destruction is still going on around them. I mean, there's just so many people out there that have lost their jobs. And so this is a time now for us to come together as a people, you know, to be helpful if we can. I do know of certain cities, smaller cities, where people are actually going door to door. Now, there isn't any violence in those cities yet, and I pray to God that it stays that way. But the people still have lost their jobs for whatever reason, because of the COVID, okay, because of the virus, pandemic, some call it a plague. And so they go with their masks on, and they knock on the doors, and they ask people if they need help. And what a way to have a good community, a good neighborhood. And if we could all just have that sense of, you know, goodness in us, you know, that too is another way to make you feel better. If we go out and help people, you feel better, whether there's the COVID out there or not. If you go out and, like I was feeding the hungry in New York City, and before this all happened. And what a good feeling it was, you know, because I knew, along with all the other 13 people who were also out there doing it with me, this is the thing to do, to help one another, to lift the spirits up. And you see their faces, you know, and they're so thankful, and that's such a good thing. So we've had an interesting show tonight. We still have 13 minutes left. And let's go back to your bio a little here, because you say when your goal is to thrive, not to survive. Too many times our survivors, and I hope a lot of them are listening, we become too complacent. Now, I'm not saying that every survivor is a person that should go out and do things, because maybe you can't quite yet, and that's okay. But those who have gotten to a point where they've reached, you know, a certain point in their life, maybe they can go in and do other things, help in hospitals or help in daycare centers, the ones that are open. We're going through terrible times now. But getting back to regular times, if we do that, and let's pray to God that we do, instead of staying home and not doing anything, yes, let's all go out and thrive. Let's all go out and help. Let's all go out and be people who are people who care, okay? Because that helps a lot of other people, and that's a good thing for us too. We continue then to you know, to thrive, and we do become thrivers, and we continue to heal on our healing journey. You have here to heal in the wake of trauma, not just as a surface level, but on a cellular level. Now, what do you mean by that, in the cellular level?
What I mean by that is it's actually to truly be able, you know, on the surface level, sometimes you can say, oh, you know, I feel better, but then something still triggers you that spins you down into a tube, so to say. And things can trigger us, definitely, you know. I was listening to this show, excuse me, I speak on a lot of platform, and I made it a habit to listen to at least two of the previous shows. And with this one, talking about abuse, I listened to the first one the other day, and then the next thing I know, I was just like sitting there crying out.
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, you know, And that's like you say, though, it is normal. Certain things happen that just bring the emotions out of us. But if we heal on cellular level, we might say, we heal on the surface level, we might say, okay, yeah, you know, we are fine. And sometimes people that that we heal on the surface level, we might say, oh, we are okay, we're fine. But when something truly happened, it's actually, we kind of back into down as deep down as we possibly can. While we are able to heal fully and on cellular level, first of all, the dance help us doing that, as well as many other modality of releasing and moving through and releasing our grief. But when we really truly heal fully, completely, all the way to the cellular level, what I notice is even when something triggers us, we don't get anywhere as deep. It might cause us to cry. It might make us take a deep breath and a step back. But we don't get into, you know, sort of sliding down the tube into a really, really dark place. It's very interesting that you asked that. And I have a recent experience, actually, with that. One of the other things that I used to be told was part of being an ugly duckling was that I have the ugliest long neck. Being a part of being an ugly duckling, you know, it's like, oh God, you know, you have such a long neck, ugly long neck, so, you know, just horrible and all these things. And of course, as a kid, that was really painful to hear. And the funniest thing was just not too long ago, I was at the I was having my hair done, and the stylist says, "Oh my God!" And my statues, I'm actually very petite. I'm barely 5 feet tall. So if you put me on those salon thing, the salon chair where you wash your hair, I barely, my torso barely make it to the, you know, the part where you need your head back. Yeah, and he says apparently he had another person who is the same height with me, but that person has very short neck, and so much so that there is no way for her to turn her head back because she has short neck. They have to put extra cushions for her to be able to reach back, or have her turn her head in in a funny way or something like that. And he said, "Oh my God," he's like, you have a very petite torso, but thank goodness you have this long, beautiful neck that allow you to be able to be comfortably having your hair washed and him comfortably washing my hair." And that came to me, and I forgot about this long neck, the ugly long neck things, actually, but one of the many things I buried. And it came back to me, and I said, "Oh, wow." It came back to my memories. But when that happened, when it came to my memories, instead of having bitterness or anger, I sat there and I said to my quietly to myself, I basically told my mother, I said, "Well, you know, thank you for helping me become a beautiful, kind swan, not just physically, but even more internally." Because at that moment, even though the memory came back, there was nothing else that I felt except gratitude of helping me grow to who I have become now. Yes, it wasn't fun when I went through it earlier, but just nothing but gratitude and love. And so that is when it's not just with me. I've seen this happen with many other people. That's when we really heal to the cellular level, where something might happen. It might bring our memory. Sometimes it might make us cry. I cried afterwards, after the hair salon. But it was no more anger, bitterness, or pain. It was just, okay, it's what had happened. I release it. I let go. I'm grateful for the lessons I have from there, and may you be blessed. And so that's really healing on the cellular level. And it's absolutely possible, regardless of what happened. I've seen people who has been through physical sexual abuse over and over again, and many clients do done that as well, to be able to heal fully and completely. And the journey into that for some of us might be a little bit painful at the beginning, but mm-hmm. it's like giving birth, right? If anybody ever mm-hmm. given birth, I actually personally never, you know, it might be painful for a moment, but the freedom that we have afterward, the right. ability to be ourselves and to live a full life and thrive, not just survive, is something mm-hmm. that worth going through.
Well, I've learned to let go, okay? In a sense, it's a form of forgiveness, but on the other hand, I can't forgive totally with my heart because they knew what they were doing, okay? They knew what they were saying. They knew what they were, well, the switches, all the other stuff. So I just gave it to God. See, I have a higher power. I mm-hmm. gave it to God. And I just released it because, and that's okay. Well, and I feel so much better because, you see, these people, you know, if someone was making fun of me, I'd look at them and I'd say, yeah, well, what about your big fat belly? Oh, yeah? You think you're perfect? Huh? Huh? No, I'd run. Okay. Yeah, that's the way I handle it. But older, you know, as getting older, if someone were to say something nasty to me, I think I'd probably just, you know, ignore them at this point because no one is perfect. And, you know, it's not whether we have a long neck, a short neck, whether our body is perfectly symmetrical or anything else. It's not a matter of with a guy how, you know, if he's well endowed or a woman if she's well endowed. Let's put it that way. I mean, it's not the body. It's the heart. Okay, mm-hmm. What do we yep. have in our heart, and what do we have in my mind, you know, and things like that. That's what's important, and that's what so many people who have been made fun of say don't realize is that it's not mm-hmm. it's not a matter of that. It's more a matter of what kind of person am I, and learning to love yourself. And the areas mm-hmm. that you might be deficient in, you know, areas that, you know, need a little fixing. If you can fix it, you know. But be happy with yourself. Learn to be happy mm-hmm. with yourself because life is short. And you never know what's going to happen yeah. tomorrow, especially in the world that we live in today. You know, you just never, never, never know. Now, we only have about 3 minutes left. Nancy from Georgia, do you want to make a quick comment? And then I'm going to hand it back over immediately. Are you still there, Nancy?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
Okay.
Hi, Nancy Brown. So I was just, you know, listening, taking notes, and I really just loved how we were talking about the birthing room, you know, how you go through so much pain, you go through so much pressure, it's chaos in the room. When you're giving birth, you can die when you're giving birth. You know, you love this thing, this being so much that you're willing to lay down your life for this person, to give them life. And then you guys talked about the higher power being God, which, mm-hmm. I mean, that's so important. I think especially when you're dealing with trauma healing, you deal with a lot of spiritual warfare. You deal with a lot of things. And you have to rely on the higher power that God's going to deal with those people. God is going to handle that situation so that you release yourself and get yourself out of the case. Now you turn it over to the master judge. You know, these people will wish that they never had to face that judge. They would much rather face you. But when they have to keep facing you, it's only hurting you and it's affecting your life, and you cannot operate on your highest vibration. So I'm just like agreeing with everything you all are saying, and I'm loving it. And I agree. That's what, you know, we have to focus on taking accountability and really pushing towards our own healing so we can become the best version of ourselves and we can help other people like us. Because I'd rather give my time to people who really appreciate my time. I'm busy. Everybody's
right.
busy. And I really don't have time to waste. And so I appreciate spending my time giving back, helping people like me. I'm getting a lot of help tonight just listening.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's
I'm
good.
Like, wow, this
that's
is so
good.
True. You know, mm-hmm. and it's stuff that I know. But guess what? It's sometimes you get busy and you might forget. So I love it. Thank you all for sharing.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. And I want to give her, oh, my goodness, she only has 1 minute left. Bridget, please say just one, you know, last final word. Tell people that there's hope and tell them to go out and dance and everything else.
Well, it is definitely, there is definitely hope. Now, that means hope to heal completely and fully and to live a fully, truly life. Loving life. We all come into this world with love, and a lot of times things that happen in our life kind of dampen our love for being able to fully experience our life. But community like this, people like in this community are the ones that can help us, and it is up for us to take one step at a time, one little step at a time sometimes, but there is definitely hope. And if you feel called to dance, not for everybody, but if you, let's say, you know, I want to try dancing, but I never dance and I don't know how it's going to work out. Well, just remember, if a stiff, clumsy, ugly duckling who should never dance can heal and help others heal from dance, you too can benefit from it.
Well, thank you so much. I have to wrap up this show. I want to thank everyone that called in. And, Bill, thank you for that. Yeah, I know you contacted a couple of people. And we had a good show, and it makes a lot of sense. So thank you so much, everyone. Take care of yourself. God bless you. And whatever
thank
makes you.
You
happy, go out and do it, okay? Because if ever we needed to be happy, it is now. Okay. All right. So good night now, and thank you. Come
thank
back
you.
Again.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You are forgotten after all that you've done.
Okay. You still there, Bill?
Yes, I am. You didn't finish the show.
Well, I have to hit the episode. Hold on. I'm having trouble with my mouse. Yeah. Do-do-do-do.
Thanks, Carol.
Okay, thank you, Bill. That was very good. I thank you for those phone calls. Okay.
God bless.
Okay. God bless. Bye-bye.